Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is the Zero Point Radio Show through BBS Radio. It is today, September the 15th. And I'm coming to you from just south of Ottawa in Ontario. And I'm just going to start out by just explaining a bit of a brief story. Back in June of this year, I traveled across Canada, and I traveled out to BC, and I presented the papers I had done on how the airplane in the North Tower, or the South Tower, was simply scripted and edited in. And anyway, so I traveled across Canada and delivered that paper and came back. And I found when I came back, it was most unusual. I had a very hard time connecting with my keyboard and being able to type in the things I would normally type in. And it's been a while now. It's almost 2 months kind of since I experienced this kind of shift in that way somehow. And I'm still trying to get through that a little bit. Yeah, and to understand what that is and kind of where to go from where I am at the moment. But anyway, I'm a mystic scientist and psychologist, and that's my background, has been in mystical and spiritual teachings. But then over the last 6 years, it's like waking up to 9/11 and then all the other events that are going on in our society. It's horrendous in a way. When one wakes up to it, you actually look up in the sky and you see them spraying us with all these neurotoxins that they're spraying all over the world. They've been doing this. It's so outrageous. And all the inoculations and how the inoculations cause more diseases than they prevent. And it's just all so horrendous. And it all ties together somehow. I mean, however it works, I really don't understand or know. But it's shocking kind of waking up to that and realizing that this situation we're in as humankind on this planet, like, holy smokes, these people, they're whacked. You know, there's something seriously wrong in their thinking and temperament. It's terrible. It's terrible. And now we're facing this new possible imminent war in Iran and Israel bombing Iran. And oh, my goodness, it just goes on and on and on. It's just terrible for any sane person these days. Like, holy smokes, if we look at the international situation or our national situations, they're terrible. This is terrible, all of it. So anyway, so it's been a while for me to try to recover a little bit and regain my senses and figure out where do I go now from here in my life. Like, my goodness, you know, it's hard to know where to turn to. But anyway, I've got my trusted friend Dee Nicholson from Toronto on with me here.
Hi, Christopher. Hi, Dee,
and she's providing good support for me in the last few weeks. I missed last week's show, and we did a replay, but that was the only time we've missed the show, and so it's been really valuable for me having Dee in with me and helping to carry the show more.
Well, thank you, my friend. It's been good to be here.
Yeah, great, dear. I'm pleased that you joined on.
Yeah, well, hey. It's like, what you got to do what you can do, don't you? Because the whole future of the world at this point in time depends on the sharing of truth, which has been suppressed by so many sources in so many ways. And whatever source of truth you can be is going to be of value to anyone who hears it, anyone who shares it, anyone who forwards it on. It helps everybody to know what the truth is. And even if we are just playing a small part, it's really a big part.
Yeah, well, that's good to remember that. And Yeah, you're right. I mean, we've just got to get the truth out and get people to wake up to what's been done.
It's getting, what's really blowing me away is, you know, you just went to the 911 Truth Tribunal in Vancouver, and that was an awesome production. And everybody who has had any contact with it has said, wow, this thing really dug. This thing really, really put things together in a perspective that people could understand. And, of course, all these questions that were raised by the so-called official story and all of the questions that have been raised by the evidence that contradicts the official story, which is a ton of it. There's almost as much evidence contradicting the World Trade Center as there is left of the World Trade Center. So it's landed on the ground. Every piece of it said something against the official story. But, no, people don't want to listen. And I'll tell you what's really bothering me, and it's the same thing with the 911 issue. People go to their government these days, and they have this plan and that plan and this grievance and that grievance, and they go in and they, you know, they make their approach to their governing bodies and to their elected officials, yada, yada, and not one of them ever gets listened to. And it's the same problem no matter what issue you're chasing down, whether it has to be health freedom or whether it's politics or whether it's the rule of law or 911 or any of those things. We're not getting a response out of the government, and people don't get why.
Yeah.
Why is it they're not responding? These are human beings. They have families. They have homes. You know, they have a life just like we do, except that they're elected. So why all of a sudden have they changed from a person who, during the election, was promising to be the voice of the people in Ottawa? And why is it now that they're in Ottawa, they've all gone shtum? Well, they've all gone shtum for a reason. And it's that reason that we are now seeing coming to fruition. The same reason I've been talking about for more than 10 years now, and that is that our rule of law is gone, our rights are gone, our nations are gone, because they've taken our sovereignty through trade affiliations. And everything is being harmonized worldwide. So now I'm hearing people who ignored me totally 10 years ago coming back and saying, guess what? It's the trade groups, people. And I'm going, hello, where were you 10 years ago when I told you this and you laughed at me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all of this stuff is going on. People are so disillusioned that they're walking around in a bit of a stupor. And in the meantime, what we're finding is that we're so heavily propagandized, and this is going to be really interesting to talk to our coming up guest, because she's coming on to talk about senior abuse and elder abuse in the institutions we put them in. And this is, you know, things that are governed by provincial health legislation, governed by federal legislation, inspected by these same bodies, run under the auspices of these same bodies, and yet our elders are being abused in them. And then you will see on TV, they'll show a commercial, a public service announcement. That public service announcement will say, oh, elder abuse is a horrible thing and we need to not tolerate it. Well, okay, we agree with that, but who do they show abusing the elders? Family members. So they're trying to convince people propaganda-wise that the only abuse elders ever suffer comes from their own families and the people close to them. Not true. As Lois Sampson from Seniors at Risk will shortly explain, the government is basically turning a blind eye to institutional abuse of elders. And the worst part is that, you know, that little thing called the power of attorney, you know, where if you become incapacitated, you've appointed someone to make decisions for you because you trust them?
Yes.
Try enforcing one. Just try enforcing one. You can't. They ignore you. They'll fight you in court. And wait till, audience, stay with us. I'm telling you, when you hear what is going on institutionally in hospitals, in elder care homes, when you hear how our elders' rights are being abused and ignored, and how they're literally being snatched for government benefit. I mean, this is a horror story. This is a real horror story. And you know, you and I, Christopher, we're getting up to that age, aren't we? No thanks, I don't want anything, and I don't want any one of my people being ignored. If I say, this man or this lady has my power of attorney, I want it honored.
Yeah, really.
So where did those rights go? You see, this
where did all of our rights go? What they've done throughout every area of our society is degenerating people and bringing in more poisons and more non-labeled fruits vegetables.
Exactly.
And I mean, these people, in my view, they're really clearly psychopathic. Like want to reduce population, and they're doing
it. Here's an interesting point too. They've given corporations human rights, okay? And what's really funny about that is there's no human to have any rights there, but they've given corporations human rights, okay? And because they've done that, corporations are by nature psychopaths because they have no emotions, they have no compassion, they have no ability to assess the truth. They're not a human entity. So they're psychopathic, they're sociopathic, they're every kind of pathic you can imagine.
Yeah, they certainly are. But at least what they're doing is criminal, in my view and in many other people's views.
Well, it's totally illegal. The whole thing is illegal. I mean, I don't know anybody. Do you know anybody who said to the person they were voting for, it's okay if you give away my rights, it's okay if you give away our sovereignty, and it's okay if you give away our freedom? Do you know anybody who's ever voted for that? Because I don't.
No. I mean, we've all been betrayed by our own political representatives.
Yeah,
we have.
All of them.
Like the conservatives and liberals and the NDP. And I mean, they've all betrayed us.
Yeah, you know what they remind me of? Do you know what they remind me of? They remind me of the old group, the Supremes. You know why they remind me of the Supremes? Because the Supremes came on stage, and this is Diana Ross's old group. They used to come on stage, a trio of women, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Were they dressed identically? No. Did they sing the same song? No. Did it harmonize with the overall song? Yes. So, you know, essentially what they've done is they've basically gone to presenting three different people in three different dresses, and we're supposed to think they're not part of the same thing. But they are.
Yes, they are. They are. And they go along with all these psychopathic agendas of these elites, like the smart meters and just so many things. Like, why are we being sprayed from the sky with these chemical poisons? You know, we're being sprayed from the sky.
Terrible. I'm still saying, if you want to know why, you have to prove that they're happening. And I, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I've looked at this every way from Sunday. Every time you ask a government official what's with these plaid trails in the sky, they'll tell you they're the contrails of jets. And I say, show me the damn flight plans.
Yeah, and they know they're lying. They know they're lying.
Of course they know they're lying.
That's the whole thing, yeah.
So why is it that we can't get an answer out of them? Well, I say, freedom of information request, show me the flight plans of these planes. According to law in this country and everywhere else, the federal aviation authorities always ask for flight plans. You can't take off without a flight plan. So these planes have flight plans. Prove to me they're passenger jets or commercial jets going from point A to point B, or shut up your argument that they're contrails.
So anyway, we'll have to come back to our contrails because
we're going to do that. You've got videos and everything. We're going to be on for hours talking about that on another show. But right now,
We got a guest, and I'll let you introduce our guest, Dee, because you know Lois better.
Yeah. Okay, I will do so. Lois, welcome, everyone. Lois Sampson from Seniors at Risk Coalition. They are based in BC, but they are national in scope. This organization investigates and stands up for seniors who are being institutionally abused, whether that's by government, by hospital, by nursing home. And they stand up for these people when no one else will. And that makes them a very, very valuable asset to all of Canada. It's an organization very well worthy of your support, as you're about to learn. Lois, we're very, very glad to have you with us today. Are you there?
Is my sound okay?
Your sound
I'm wearing
is
a headset, so I can adjust where the microphone is.
No, you're fine, Lois. Thanks for being with,
right.
you, with us today.
Thank you.
And, you know, there's just so much to say. I went through your website. I went through the information you have sent me. And there's just so much to say here. I mean, I almost don't know where to start. But maybe you could start with a little overview of the organization, what it's up to. You know, let people know that you're there for their support and that you need and deserve their support.
All right. Seniors at Risk is an independent, non-profit organization. We are staffed by volunteers entirely, and we do not take any funding from governments, from political parties, from unions, or from any vested interests such as pharmaceutical companies and so forth, as many advocacy, so-called advocacy groups do. And so we have done so deliberately because our purpose is to help individuals and families who are being who are having difficulty with government organizations and with public agencies with regard to health care, with regard to their legal rights. So we're there for the families and the individuals, the people who are ensnared in very dire situations in a healthcare environment.
Excellent. Now, maybe we can give people an example. I know I don't know what you want to say about it, but I know that your own involvement in this started because you yourself went through literal hell dealing with your late mother and her situation. And there are certainly cases that you're working on now, and maybe people should get an idea of exactly what sort of abuse we're talking about, because a lot of people aren't aware. You know, they shove Granny into an institution and they see her declining, they don't know why and they don't question. But your situation was very, very dramatic, and other situations you are working on are just as dramatic. So there's some crazy
yes.
stuff going on. Give us an overview of the kind of thing you're fighting right now and exactly how you do it.
All right. Yes, I do have. I come from a personal experience in this situation, as do many people who volunteer with Seniors at Risk. And so, what we are working with is, it is indeed unbelievable. It's unbelievable when you become embroiled in it, and it is unbelievable to people who have not yet experienced it. What we do find are that the rights of seniors and the rights of the legally appointed either power of attorney or some other legally appointed decision maker, those rights are being either ignored or taken away unlawfully and by the individuals. So they actually are stripped of their rights as human beings. That means their rights to freedom, their rights to accept or not accept medical treatment, drugs, and so forth. It also means often the right to manage their financial assets, and these are often taken over by either a government body. A body that's been appointed to ostensibly ensure that that seniors are not being abused. But in fact, what is happening is those rights are being usurped by the government, and they then end up managing the assets. In many cases, they will seize bank accounts, seize property, and so forth. And the family and the legal appointed decision makers are rendered powerless by the government bodies and the authorities, who should actually be working to prevent this kind of abuse. So what we have is seniors are being improperly apprehended. They are being incarcerated in nursing homes. They are being abused without any assistance, being abused by nursing home staff, doctors, and so forth. They have their property taken away from them. And increasingly, we see police working in conjunction with nursing homes to help ban or severely restrict family members from seeing the individual, to isolate the individual. So they lose their home, their freedom, their assets, and indeed their own families, and in some cases their lives.
And all for the crime of being old.
Well, it's actually, it's rather, I wouldn't call it the crime of being old, although when what we find is when people slide over, the age seems to be you become a target once you get past the age of 60 years of age. We have a number of people who are in their 60s who are being improperly incarcerated in quote unquote health care facilities. But we've also had this happen to younger people, a man in his 40s and a young man in his 20s. So we've had a full range of cases, but we ourselves focus on the seniors because they seem to be the sort of the easy pickings, the low-hanging fruit. And they, of course, have money, they have assets, and so forth. So they are extremely vulnerable to fraud and abuse by healthcare institutions and healthcare providers, and public agencies such as the courts or public guardians, the bodies that make people wards of the state.
So, in other words, basically, if a person becomes ill, a senior citizen or a person over 60 becomes ill, is possibly going to become incapacitated for a period of time, whether that's permanent or otherwise, and appoints someone, either a family member or a close friend or a lawyer or somebody, as their power of attorney, not only do the power of attorneys get completely ignored, and doctors completely take over, and care personnel completely take over and ignore all that. But on top of that, these people are being drugged to the point of being drooling idiots, aren't they?
That often happens, and this is going on across Canada and the United States and also Great Britain. The use of, for example, antipsychotic drugs in nursing homes is at an epidemic level, and this has been known for quite a number of years, about a decade. There have been increasing studies. There have been proclamations from blue chip panels in the U.S., in the U.K., and lately in Canada as well, proclaiming how terrible it is that antipsychotic drugs are being used as quote unquote, and these are government the terms the government uses, chemical restraints. And yet, despite all of these reports, the use of these drugs continues to skyrocket. And so those drugs, antipsychotic drugs in particular, but also antidepressants, painkillers, and so forth, those drugs have a number of side effects. These are side effects that are actually admitted to by the manufacturers and by the pharmaceutical drug regulators, the FDA and so forth. So they know that they exist, and some of those side effects include cognitive impairment, anxiety, memory loss, and so forth. All of the things that supposedly you want to prevent in the senior population.
Yeah, and on that point, Lois, I think it's important that people realize that there are a lot of drugs that are in very, very common use in these situations, and the one that leaps immediately to mind, of course, is Zyprexa. Now, if people are not aware of mainstream news, in 2010, Zyprexa earned the largest criminal fine in U.S. history for the off-label prescription of Zyprexa to people who had heart and stroke issues, when Zyprexa actually causes these issues, exacerbates them, and it is off-label use to use with anyone with dementia. It is off-label to use with anyone who's had a stroke, with anyone who has a heart condition, and yet Zyprexa is being, even after the fine, doctors in Canada are routinely prescribing this stuff. And I know from personal experience, and you know what that is, we'll get into that later, but I know particularly of one person who was slapped onto Zyprexa, and added to that was Haldol, which is haloperidol, which is very, very dangerous. You might recall that back in the Bush the second was taking Haldol, and they damn near substituted Cheney as president because he was on this antipsychotic drug. So here they are routinely feeding our seniors this stuff to keep them quiet. They don't like to hear the sounds. They don't like to hear the complaints, the yelling, the screaming in pain. They don't want to hear that, so they drug them up. And they even have a term for it, don't they? They call it snowing.
That's correct. That started to arrive. An article was published a couple of months ago about that term being used by nursing home staff in British Columbia, which has one of the highest incidents of drugging of nursing home residents with antipsychotic drugs. But I will say, I will explain one other thing that I think is important for people to understand, and because it's very difficult to when you say that there are some people yelling and screaming and so forth, yes, there are people who have serious problems and it needs to be addressed, and sometimes some of these medications are helpful in some instances. However, what I'd like to explain to people is what all too often happens to seniors. People think, all right, we need to put our mother or grandmother or so forth in a nursing home because she needs a little care and it's not safe for her to be at home alone. So they do a very good job of looking for an appropriate nursing home. When that person is put in a nursing home, when this is done, the senior feels great trepidation. Even when it's done in the most caring and considerate manner by family and so forth, and even when it's sometimes it's the person themselves. Very rarely, but sometimes the person themselves thinks, "I would like to go into a nursing home." But here's what happens. Try to put yourself in the shoes of, imagine yourself. You don't want to go into a nursing home, but the family is pressuring you, and so you think you don't want to be a burden to the family and so forth, and the family thinks it's a good idea, genuinely has the best interest of the person at heart. Well, when the person goes in and they may step into a lovely home, nursing home with gardens and so forth, and a lot of smiling staff and a roster for all of the activities and so forth. And then they're shown to their room or shared room or whatever it is, and then life begins. Well, life begins. All of a sudden, they begin to find out, oh, no, I'm sorry, you can't eat there at that time. You can't go out at that time. No, we want you here or we want you there. No, you can't do this or that. All of a sudden, they start to say, well, I don't agree with that. I'd like to have something else happen, or I'd like to go out for lunch with so-and-so. I like to stay up and read until 11 o'clock. Not permitted. As one registered nurse who has worked for many years with us said, the moment a person steps over the threshold into a nursing home or other residential care facility, and we can include hospitals in that, they lose their rights as a person. They lose their freedom and their rights, even if they still have their capability, they still have all of their faculties and so forth. And even if there is no one else who's has been appointed a decision maker. Why? Because it's as if you're in the Army now. This is a big institution. Even when it's smaller facilities, the staff run the show. They will tell you when to eat, and they will tell you when to go to the bathroom if you're not able to do it yourself. They will tell you what time lights are out and so forth. Now, if you or the family start to complain, they will often say, oh, that person's agitated, and ask the doctor for a drug to help calm them because they're agitated. And that happens often within days when the reality of life in those places hits home and they can do nothing about that. And they realize this is a trap and they want to get out. So often they're drugged immediately. And then when they're drugged, of course, the family starts to think, oh, they're really going downhill. They're losing their faculties. You know, I guess we can't really believe what grandma or mom is saying because, you know, she's losing it quickly. It must be dementia. Mm-hmm. And nobody stops to think what it might be. It might be that any one of us would be frightened, worried, sick at having been put in a situation like that, and that someone might be drugging them. And often the seniors, the people in the home, the residents in the home, when they enter a facility like that, they aren't told. Often they are not told what drugs they're getting, or even if they're getting drugs. And certainly they, do not believe they're being told, being given the information about the side effects of drugs as they are required to, by law, to be an informed decision maker, to give consent to taking a drug.
Yeah, to my knowledge, you know, and in my experience in hospitals myself, basically if a patient or a resident of a nursing home or whatever, if they say, what's that drug, they'll say, oh, it's just something to help you sleep. Or it's
That's
just
correct.
Something for your liver, or it's just something for this or that. They never explain. They never give you a name. They never give you information from the package insert. They never allow you to know what the side effects may be. And then we see commercials for drugs on American TV. We don't get them here like they do in the States. But it'll be a 30-second commercial on mainstream television, and 10 seconds of it will be devoted to, gee, how wonderful this drug is. And then the remaining 20 seconds of the commercial is fully two-thirds of the airtime that's costing them a fortune to buy. And what is it? It's side effects. Don't take if you have this. This could cause this. Watch for a bacterial infection. It could lead to death. Anyway, wait a minute. If I see the word death on a label, you're going to have to strap me down to force me to take it. And these people are strapped down and are being forced to take it.
That's correct. I will say one thing, though. When you say, and I'll speak for both the U.S. and Canada, because we work with other organizations, and I'll mention one in particular. In the U.S., there are a number of organizations, and I will mention them as we go along. One of them is the National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, and we will speak about that a little bit later in more detail. We're talking about medications now, but hand in glove with medications goes the issue of the legal rights of an individual. Because
exactly.
When a person is medicated, even if the side effects are temporary, quite often what happens is someone steps in to legally declare them incapable, and then a guardian is appointed. And often, both in the U.S. and Canada, even though we're different countries and even though our healthcare systems and our legal systems are slightly different, the issue is simply the same. The senior population, that demographic, is simply having their rights and freedoms stripped from them, and as I said, their assets, their families, their loved ones, everything, because the legislators and the law enforcement people and the watchdogs, the public watchdogs, work hand in glove with the healthcare industry to ensure that the individual's rights and the rights of their legal substitute decision makers are hamstrung, so that they cannot attack. So that's one thing I'd like to just make mention of here, that this affects both Canada and U.S. And you mentioned that we in Canada don't get the it's against the law. You are correct for drug companies to advertise their products. But in fact, Canadians see those ads all the time, every day, because we live in a techno savvy world. And even before that, cable channels routinely, Canadians watch as much American TV and arguably more. It's all available on broadcasts on the internet as well, and also U.S. magazines. You can pick them up on the newsstands across Canada, mm-hmm. and they all contain advertisements for drugs with the pages and pages and pages of side effects and warning, the legal small print. The last thing I'll say about that is, and yes, all of those things are spelled out, but those are really not going to help us call pharmaceutical companies to account, or doctors, or hospitals, or nursing homes. Why? Because there's one way in which they slide out from under those, quote, safeguards. They simply say, actually two ways. They say that, well, everything has a downside and a side effect, and you have to weigh the pros and cons. That's one thing. And then they also say, well, these side effects don't occur all the time in every person, so there's absolutely no way you can prove that a person, that a particular side effect is being caused by a particular drug. So that if anyone thinks we're being protected by the publication of the side effects, in fact, in the real world, the legal world, it's almost impossible for any individual to hold a facility, a healthcare facility or doctor to account. Yes, we have had fines, both in like billion-dollar fines in the U.S. and in Canada, but really, the even when they're in the billion-dollar range and highest ever and so forth, really this amounts to the cost of doing business and nothing more for them.
Absolutely. I mean, we're all basically being put into a context of how sustainable we are as individual cows in their herd. Essentially,
yes.
That's what we're looking at. And now what we're seeing also, and I think this also goes hand in hand with the difficulties that people have maintaining their care level as they age and as they require it, is the fact that there are now all these rumors floating around about death panels with Obamacare. We know that seniors are routinely being denied certain surgeries, certain treatments, and even experimental treatments, even in palliative care. And, you know, this to me is bespeaking, really, it's good farm husbandry is what it is. When you've got too many animals in the field, you cull a few of them. If you can't sell them, you kill them and eat them. Well, they're not going to be eating us yet, but they're certainly killing us, aren't they? And of course, there's two areas of extreme vulnerability. One is when you're first born, of course, and they slam you up with 27 or 30 vaccines in the first 2 years of your life, thereby debilitating your health for forever. And then on the
compromising
other end
your
of the spectrum, you know, back when you go back into diapers again, right, what do they do to you there? They make sure you can't think, they make sure you can't talk, and they make sure nobody can talk for you. And then on top of that, they remove all your rights. They remove your ability to get health care. Well, what are we paying for?
Yes. We have seen these cases. We deal with them over and over. And it is very definitely the seniors demographic in the developed world is at risk. We see that over and over. At Seniors at Risk, we published about a month ago a story from the UK. A top doctor in the UK broke a story there, but of course in North America this was not exactly picked up. There was a story in the UK about a top doctor there who came right out and said, on an annual basis, their figures show that there are 130,000, quote-unquote, premature deaths in the UK every year. And by that, they mean the inappropriate, unlawful use of morphine to put seniors to death who otherwise would not have died. So in other words, to cause their death. And in Canada, one of the the Canadian Medical Association, their journal in Canada, it's equivalent of the New England Journal of Medicine. Their editorial of their summer issue spoke about the need to have dialogue about "quote unquote" therapeutic homicide.
Isn't that a
This is the Canadian Medical Association journal.
Uh-huh.
Discussing therapeutic homicide. So they're wanting to normalize that. They're wanting to have the public start to see this as, well, this is kind of what we do, isn't it? I'll give you an example of an email that Seniors at Risk got just a week ago from someone that was relaying about my mom's reaction to some of the Seniors at Risk information that I passed along to her originally, was basically disbelief. She had said, forget about that. There's always two sides to every story. Well, this person continues to write, she was telling me about one of their acquaintances who was hospitalized because of pneumonia. This guy's doctor asked him if he wanted to discontinue food and water, and both him and his family said absolutely not. The guy recovered about a week later and is fine at home and leading a very active life. He is younger than my parents. My mom was really angry about that. Then her own family doctor suggested that she sign a do not resuscitate order. And my mom said she would think about it. She went home, thought about it, and then got mad. She has congestive heart failure but is fairly active. Her and dad take the dog for walks along the waterfront. So it's not like she's on her deathbed. Mom will be 80 in February. Dad is turning 82 in a few weeks. This person was just stunned, as was her mother, at a doctor suggesting to someone that all of a sudden they discontinue food and water. Yes, and actually the article I mentioned about the $130,000 premature deaths in the U.S. That was achieved with the use of something called the Liverpool pathway, and what that is, the use of morphine plus the withholding of food and water, and the person essentially dies of dehydration and thirst. And a depression of their ability to breathe, suppression of their ability to breathe. That's what morphine causes. It takes a few days for them to die, often three or four is the average, and it is not a pleasant way to go. They are drugged, and so they aren't going to be screaming and thrashing and so forth, but it is an excruciating death to undergo, and we have people working with our organization who have had personal experiences where they were forced, they experienced the death of a loved one, sat with them for those days as they died, and we have first person accounts.
Yeah,
these people
were
prevented
talking
legally from saving the person because the hospital and that care providers wish that person to have an early death.
And basically you're talking about a cascade failure of organs, which is extremely painful, and in which you're talking about the denial of food and water is what causes that. And in the meantime, in order that they not, quote, suffer, end quote, They're being put down like animals.
Yes.
Is what's really
well, actually, less humanely than animals.
Much less humanely.
Actually.
Mm-hmm. What's therapeutic about this? I mean, what is the therapy designed? I mean, to use the word therapeutic, it usually means therapy related. Well, who's getting the therapy?
Well, that's one of the things that the I don't call them a medical profession any longer. I call it a medical industry, and I really, unfortunately, I wish that wasn't the case. But as a system overall, the medical industry, by that I mean the doctors, as a system generally speaking, are simply have moved so far in the opposite direction of the Hippocratic Oath that it is it would shock most people to know. Now, having said that, our organization works with some wonderful doctors, wonderful nurses, and we have some very good and caring lawyers working with us as well. Those are the exceptions. Those are the exceptions that will actually stand up, who understand what an ethical approach is, and who will do their utmost to care for the individual and ensure that there no harm comes to them. The systems overall, the medical industry, the legal industry, people are products. People
yeah.
are absolutely products, and
yeah.
in some
well,
cases...
we know that, and I've been shouting it from the rooftops for years, that the motto of the medical industry, and that's exactly what it is a patient cured is a customer lost. They have absolutely no motive to fix anybody, because if they fix you, you're not going to be paying them. So, obviously, out goes their profit. And I find it really interesting that medicine is one of those professions where you get paid even if you lose the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some countries that are now, as I hear it, they're starting to look at the fact that, you know, people are having to pay these massive fees. The government is kicking in under medical programs, paying these massive fees, and what is the result they're getting for it? So it's kind of funny. The system's kind of eating itself, isn't it? You know, when it gets to that point, the system is eating itself. It's complaining against the rules that it's instituted in order to profit. Now it's eating itself with its own greed.
It is. And there are two things that we find in these cases. In some cases, people are being are simply having their lives ended prematurely. In other cases... equally, really, we have virtually equal numbers of cases where people are being apprehended and incarcerated unlawfully in healthcare institutions against their will, against the will of their legal decision makers, and and in many cases do not even need to be in a facility, and yet they are being put there and kept there for years. And in many cases, these people are not just receiving one or two drugs. These people are almost there's a term that's used in the literature called polypharmacy, and that's multiple use of drugs. When we talk about drugs like Zyprexa and Haldol and so forth, antipsychotic drugs or antidepressant drugs, those are two different classes of drugs, uppers and downers, essentially, in the street lingo. These drugs on their own have very, very, very serious side effects, some fatal. And when they're prescribed together, those risks increase exponentially. And as a matter of fact, there's absolutely no testing done on polypharmacy, i.e., routinely seniors will have, it is not unusual to have to see seniors on 3, 4, 5, 6 drugs, many of them, a dozen drugs. These are powerful drugs. They work. They are even more powerful because of the metabolism of the elderly. They're not able to process it as readily as younger adults are, and so the impacts are further magnified. And routinely, in case after case after case that we've dealt with over the last 6 years that we've been working in this, the medical professions, the nursing home staff, and so forth, it is as if they refuse to. They almost virtually never look at side effects of drugs as being a possible cause of anything or a possible issue to be concerned about. The only time we've seen those concerns arise is when governments will issue huge reports decrying and isn't this awful? How come there's so much drugging going on? Mm-hmm. And so, but in the healthcare arena itself, on the ground, in the nursing homes, in the hospitals, they simply ignore all of that and carry on as if they simply carry on as if there is no problem with these drugs, as if they've never heard of side effects, and they have no interest in addressing that issue. So we have a lot of drugging going on well beyond just, you know, looking at one or two high-profile drugs that make their way through the legal system and in class action lawsuits.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know that one particular case that I know you'll be speaking about that I have a personal involvement in, where this particular gentleman's power of attorney has been completely ignored, where he has been given drugs against his will from the get-go, where his personal decision maker, his appointed power of attorney, was completely ignored when she stood up and said, wait a minute, he doesn't need that and it's counterproductive to his health. I personally was in a meeting where I confronted the two doctors who were prescribing all this stuff to this gentleman. And I said to them, I said, are you aware that Zyprexa caused the largest criminal fine in U.S. history for exactly what you're using it for on this gentleman? And yes, they both knew about it. They both heard about it. And after the fact, after that information came out, they still prescribed it for this man. And I said, how dare you do that? How dare you?
They all know about it, and they carry on. The medical industry, they're well aware of it. It simply is that they have no interest in addressing this issue because it is not a problem for them. It is a benefit for them. It is a benefit to have seniors drugged on many, many levels. Mm-hmm. And here's where we have seen this, looking at these cases, looking at the court cases associated with this issue as well. For example, in another case, a legal case that revolved around the guardianship of a particular person. There was a concerned family member that engaged an internationally renowned set of medical experts to review the medical file, to assess the elderly person's health, to look at what drugs were being prescribed, and look at the records over the past several years. These medical affidavits strongly recommended that the medication should be discontinued, that there was no medical reason for a number of the medications to have been prescribed in the first place. And these were extensive affidavits with people who had examined the person and so forth. It was entirely, that evidence was simply ignored by the Supreme Court justice in the case. Absolutely ignored. So at the highest levels, these issues are known and they are ignored. And so that's an issue. I will, if I could, on the legal matter, I'd like to discuss a situation in the United States that is really starting to come to the fore, and that's what happens, as we spoke about before, when people are drugged and their abilities are therefore altered by these powerful medications, and then a doctor signs off and said, "Oh yes, this says this person is incapable of managing because they can't count backwards by seven, and so forth." There are these silly little tests that are routinely discredited.
I know adults are perfectly healthy, but they can't do that.
Yes, exactly. So people are routinely a doctor will sign a paper saying they're incapable, and these tests are really quite silly and quite and have been debunked, as I said, but they still use them, and they provide no other evidence whatsoever of a person's capability. And even when there are competing affidavits in court that show that a doctor's assessment is incorrect, or in some cases we've had doctors lie in sworn testimony and perjure themselves, the courts have looked the other way. So we really have a problem with the courts. That particular one was a Canadian situation. But in the U.S., over the last 10 years, something has really become a problem there. In the United States, they have something called professional guardians. So if someone makes a complaint about a particular person, it could be a family member who wants to protect a person, an elderly person, and thinks that they are not capable of handling their financial accounts or whatever it may be, their daily living activities. The courts become involved, and increasingly, what the courts are doing are appointing something called a professional guardian. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it appears in many, many cases that these professional guardians that are being appointed are lawyers and accountants and so forth who are cronies of the judges, mm-hmm. literally cronies of judges, their pals. And so that is another avenue by which these estates and the rights of people, not just the estates, because when their professional guardian is appointed, often it will be for their personal care as well as their financial care. Mm-hmm. And so all manner of problems arise. The professional guardian does not release enough funds from the estate to cover needed care and treatments, and so there's abuse in that regard. There are all sorts of abuses with regard to mismanagement of financial interests and so forth. And guardians have a great deal of power as well on the person's life and their family. A guardian can and often does dictate who the senior, who the elderly person can actually see, what they can dress, what they should eat, or what they can wear, what they should eat, who they can see, and so forth. And in many cases, when family members become concerned about the negligent care of an individual, they are often banned from seeing the individual by the guardian. In other words, it's a built-in protection for someone who wishes to do harm to a senior.
And,
so that's going.
Course,
that's a real problem across the U.S. right now because it's another business opportunity for the legal industry and the accounting industry.
Yeah, isn't it just? And of course, you know, one of the big cases that you're working on right now, which is such an exemplar of this, in that particular case, the person was banned from the hospital premises, and this is the only person in town who ever came to see the man on any kind of a regular basis, was living with this person for 26 years, had legal power of attorney, and this person was banned from hospital premises and not allowed to go and see the individual over whom she had power of attorney.
And that's correct. This is a Toronto case that I believe you're speaking about.
Yep.
It's a case. It's the man's name is Arthur Hippy, and he's 68 years old. 2 years ago, he suffered a stroke, and he unbelievably. And so his partner called an ambulance. And he was taken to emergency by the ambulance, discharged the next morning, still suffering obvious effects of stroke. And so the couple, he was discharged on his own, disoriented and unable to walk easily. And so his wife got a phone call from them saying, "Do you want us to put him in a cab?" And of course, he said, "No, I'll be right there," and rushed over. Took him home for the next few days, where his symptoms got progressively worse, and she took him to another hospital. He's been there ever since.
Yeah,
and I
know the personal details of this case because I was involved. I know the man.
I've known the
man for more than 8 years. I knew him when he was normal. And I can recall hearing about exactly what you're talking about. The caregiver, his partner, actually struggled to maintain his ability to live by herself for 5 days. And she literally had to help the man pee. It was that bad. Had to lie next to him in bed to make sure that he didn't fall out of bed. And he was discharged on that Saturday morning, and they had not even given him any kind of test to find out exactly how extensive this stroke was. They just basically threw him out.
Yes, and then when she took him to another hospital, it was a hospital also run by the same organization, the Rouge Valley Health System, just in the eastern edge of Toronto, Ontario. She took him back to the hospital, and here's what then ensued, which led up to the banning of this woman. So he was back in the hospital, and within the first few days, he went back into the hospital walking and talking and so forth. And she was quickly told within a couple of days by a doctor, we think it would be best if you just for him if you just let him go.
Uh-huh.
And she was horrified because she thought, this man is not in a coma. He's had a stroke. But it's not the end of the world. You can recover from strokes, or at least make considerable progress. And she, in writing, stipulated, "I do not want a DNR order on on Arthur's chart. The hospital ignored that, and she has legal power of attorney for her partner.
The hospital simply ignored that power of attorney.
Pardon me?
I was a witness to that power of attorney, which they ignore.
Right. Okay. The hospital ignored that, unbeknownst to her, because they were not providing her with records. So they unbeknownst to her, put a do not resuscitate order on his chart. And I will go very quickly over a couple of details, but she was advocating for him so greatly. He was not given any rehabilitation. He became paralyzed on the left side of his body, and his speech was impaired. And instead of giving him therapy, they put him on powerful antipsychotic drugs, which are known to cause stroke. And when she found out about that by accident, what happened first was she said, please, can he not have some therapy? Instead of that, what they did was they simply sat him in a chair and tied him in and left him there for hours upon hours, up to 8 hours a day. And when she asked, please, can you get him some therapy? Can we get, you know, instead of doing that, they started to use Haldol on him, so that he was, of course, unable to respond quickly, unable to function properly. When you're on these drugs, it has a powerful impact on both your physical and your mental capabilities.
Yeah, and I was
so that's
witness
how they
that
dealt
transition
with him
as well, because I saw him. After he had one stroke, he was walking and talking and doing quite well, making himself smoothies, cooking for himself, dressing himself, taking care of himself. He was a little slow at it, but he was okay. Then they put him on blood thinners, and they warned Marilyn, because the blood thinner, of course, is rat poison, warfarin, Coumadin.
Yes.
And they warned her that if he ever came off it, that he would immediately hypercoagulate and have another stroke and probably die. So they literally tried to scare her into saying, oh, well, okay then, continue to give him rat poison. Well, that wasn't going to work with her because she's no dummy. She's been a health activist for, 30-plus years, and he, along with her, was a health activist, and he knew his stuff too. She knew exactly what she was doing. She knew exactly what she was saying. The problem is the man never had his own doctor to intervene. But, of course, the bottom line is they stuck him on all this stuff. As they stuck him in all these drugs and failed to give him therapy, the man regressed and regressed and regressed. Now, when I first saw him in the hospital and he had had the stroke, he was in there. He would recognize you. He would not be able to speak to you in sentences because his verbal capacity had been damaged. But he would recognize you. He would say hello. He would say things like, where you been? Where you been? Because he knew you hadn't seen him for a while. And this is how he was when he first went in. Well, a matter of weeks later, after their so-called treatment and their complete, I mean complete absence of therapy, what's he like? Well, he's a drooling idiot. He can't recognize.
Well, I wouldn't say he's the evidence that has been presented by independent witnesses. He is not that he definitely is not a drooling idiot. So that would not be accurate to say.
On the occasions that I saw him, he was unable to recognize anybody, and he had spittle around his mouth, and he was lying on a side that actually hurt him. And he was terribly uncomfortable. He was losing weight already, and now he's a skeleton. He went in there 190 pounds, and he's now about 100 pounds, a little over 100.
That's correct. That's correct.
You know,
however,
I saw it. So, yeah, he, at times, he was drugged that badly.
Yes, but we need to be very clear because there is a court case underway, so we need to be very clear about this. The evidence coming out of the last few weeks shows, and yes, at times he may have been a drooling idiot because that would have been likely under heavy, powerful drugs, heavy
it
medication
was. Was
using
the kind of,
powerful drugs.
They just slapped him on Haldol and Zyprexa. That was exactly when it was, yes.
Yes, so we have to be very careful because this man has now, I will just continue the story just so the listeners can understand a little bit just in the overarching situation. So his partner was a strong advocate for him, trying to get to make sure that he was going to get some care, and she was very concerned about that, and she tried every avenue to make sure that he was getting proper care. And she was routinely ignored. And one of the things that she did if they ignored her wishes, and in under the law in Ontario, under which she has the power of attorney, she has the right to consent to or not consent to the use of certain drugs. But the hospital and the doctors simply ignored her, and they told her, if you do not agree with our treatment plan, then we will take away your power of attorney. Later on, they said to her, if you do not agree with our treatment plan, we will declare you incapable, legally incapable and therefore not able to enact the power of attorney that's been granted to you. So there was increasing pressure put on Mr. Hippie's partner, Marilyn Nelson, and she still continued to do whatever she could. She visited him every day. She brought him a meal, cooked him a meal every day because she was concerned that he was not getting adequate nutrition, and so she would bring him supper every night. And in December of last year, 2011, she went to bring Arthur supper, and she was met by two guards who handed her a letter. And the letter said that she was banned from the facility, from the entire facility, including the parking lot and everything else. And no reason was given in that letter. She found out from the guards that the hospital alleged that she had struck Arthur the night before, and she maintains she did not. She was horrified. She went immediately to the police, and she herself went to the police to complain about this. And the police investigated, and after a week's investigation, came back and said to her, there are no grounds for the hospital's allegation. Yet, she was banned from seeing Arthur for almost 2 months, absolutely banned, did not see him on his birthday, was not even allowed to drop off a birthday card from herself and a birthday card from Arthur's sister. It was absolutely draconian. So you can see how these things arise, and how the credibility and authority of a legal decision maker is undermined, and that's what we have in this case. And in this case now, in the last several months, the hospital has increased the harassment and the negligence, one could say, of treatment with regard to Mr. Hippie by suddenly placing him on palliative care. And for those who don't know, palliative care should be for someone with a terminal illness who is expected to die shortly. Having a stroke is not a terminal illness. He's not on any life support. He can't walk by himself because he's paralyzed on the one side, although had he received any therapy at all, he might well be able to get around a little bit more easily. He is able to be in a chair and go to the dining room for supper and so forth, and eat and whatnot. So he interacts with Marilyn and with others who are there. And as I say, we've had independent witnesses to that effect over the last couple of months that he is engaging. He's answering yes, no. He agrees. He disagrees. So he is quite engaged. He is not someone who should be on palliative care. When they put someone on palliative care, that means they will not provide treatment. And for example, should he get a minor infection that any one of us could shrug off, his compromised immune system, without any antibiotics, it could kill him.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So that's just one example.
Yeah, and that's an interesting example, too, because I can recall about a year ago, it was declared that he'd been identified as having that one of those aggressive bacterial infections that people get only in hospitals. One of them is called EDTL and the other is MRSA. And they're both staph-type infections, but they are super bugs in the sense that they are resistant to all manner of antibacterial or antiviral drugs. Now, interestingly enough, we're not entirely sure, nor could we ever prove at the time that Mr. Hippie actually was infected, but in order for Marilyn to go and see him, she had to don a gown and gloves and a mask and the whole nine. He was then isolated in a room. It was bad enough he was in a room with a couple of other people who were on palliative care and were dying, and he had nothing to listen to except the moans and groans of other people, not a plant in the room, not a TV, nothing. And he was isolated all by himself for many hours a day, and then on top of that, then they tell Marilyn she can't go see him at all. So, this thing just, it cascaded. It got worse and worse and worse. And as a casual observer, which I was, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, you know, the more she fights for him, the more they clamp down on him. And it's almost as though he is being punished for her trying to exert his rights. And that's exactly what was going on. They were both being punished. It was not just Arthur being punished. So,
and here's the situation now, and this applies to people across North America. The irony of the situation, she has a power of attorney for personal care and for property, so she has the full legal authority for Arthur Hippie, Marilyn Nelson does. They were not, the hospital and the doctors Rouge Valley Health Care, the health system, were simply ignoring her legal rights. She had a lawyer send a letter to that effect. She had several lawyers become involved, and they continued to ignore that. Mm-hmm. So in as a desperate last effort, she went to court to seek an emergency court order simply to have the hospital respect her legal authority so that she could move Arthur Hippie to another care facility and obtain another doctor. And so she has done this in the last month, and the court does not consider it an emergency. So now the hospital and the public guardian and trustee and so forth, they are all moving for a lengthy, broader court case and saying that, oh, she now has to apply for guardianship. And so people must understand when they sign powers of attorney and those kinds of legal documents, thinking that they're protected, actually, what we find increasingly are those documents are not worth the paper they're written on. The courts mm-hmm. don't even recognize them. No one does. Mm-hmm. These are like products coming up that are designed for the assembly line, and lawyers behind the scenes come up with laws, and they say, oh, let's put in place a law to ensure that the person's rights are protected and they have a substitute decision maker, and we have this legislation, the power of attorney legislation, and it will protect you.
Yeah,
and we come to us and we will draw.
You can't judge by that cover.
No, and they say you come to a lawyer and you get it properly drawn up. The problem is it's nothing more than another product, no better for you than any of the pharmaceutical companies' new products that are either the same drug, they're just marketing to a different disease area, where it's going to cost you money, may harm you, and will certainly not protect you. That is what's happening with all of these legal protections that we're being urged to go to lawyers and pay for and have in our hands. Because Marilyn Nelson has a valid power of attorney for Arthur Hippe. It has never been, the hospital has never said it's an invalid document. Nobody has. There's nothing wrong with it, yet she's told that she has to go to court now and apply for guardianship, another legal document overall. Why should she apply for guardianship if she already has a valid power of attorney?
Yeah, and as I understand it, at this point in time, the provincial guardian and trustee's office was brought in by the hospital with a view to removing her power of attorney in the first place. They failed at that effort over a year ago, and now they're deciding to let the power of attorney stand, as though they're going to actually honor it. And now what they're doing is they're taking another approach, which is to put a microscope literally up the butt of Ms. Nelson and Mr. Hippe and see where all their, where all his assets are going.
Well, actually, they claimed that, but just in the last week there was another court proceeding, and the public guardian and trustee now claims that that we have nothing to do with this case. We won't be involved.
Good. Well, that's one little victory, isn't it?
No, it actually isn't, because they're just hiding. They don't want the they don't want a light to be shone on the public guardian and trustee, because there is evidence in the court of having filed false information and misled the client and so forth, misled Marilyn Nelson, their client at the time.
Well, anything to avoid a scandal.
They're working with the hospital, and the hospital has requested that Marilyn Nelson apply for guardianship. If she was successful in that court action, which is highly dubious and unnecessary and costly, if she was successful, she would then, as a guardian, be reporting to the public guardian and trustee. So it is actually just another ruse.
So it's a cyclical argument. No matter, all these roads lead to the same Rome.
They do. And that's the one key thing people need to be aware of, is that these legal documents are increasingly not worth the, being seen to be not worth the money, the paper they're written on, not respected by hospitals, by doctors, or by the courts. And on the other hand, you need to have them in place, because if you don't have them in place, they will run roughshod over you. So it's a very, very, very clever trap that they've laid for everybody. And the problem is that people are not aware of these things until they find themselves in this swirling cauldron. And we get reports of cases. They're just flooding into us from across Canada and literally coast to coast. And, of course, we're made aware of cases in the U.S. As I mentioned earlier, there are a number of sites where these issues are discussed. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, which is www.stopguardianabuse.org. There's another good organization, journalistic website that I would highly recommend. They deal with a lot of issues, but they've done wonderful work in healthcare, nursing care, unearth the fact that autopsies are almost never done on elder deaths. It's an organization called ProPublica, and it's journalism in the public interest, and it's www.propublica.org. So those are two good organizations that I would heavily recommend. And our website, which is www.seniorsatrisk.org, and another organization that I would recommend, which is elderadvocates.ca. It also has a lot of case information there.
Yeah, and it is a real education. I mean, I've been going through your website this week, as you know, and I mean, when you see the stories that are going on, it's overwhelming. It truly is overwhelming. You would never imagine, you know, as your average citizen, you would never imagine that our system would turn on people like that. But it is turning on people like that. And it's all, as you so rightly point out, it's all about profit, and that word sustainability keeps popping up. You know, sustainability. Sustainability in your healthcare system does not involve taking care of a bunch of old people whose value to society is next to nothing now because they're done. Okay, therefore, we're not going to spend on them because they're done, never mind honoring their contribution to society, which they've probably made for 50 years and more. You know, and all of a sudden, there are just no rights. And I think I mentioned to you, Lois, on one of our conversations that I had, and I know I've mentioned it on this show before, that our justice minister said to me, with respect to health freedom, and essentially that's what we're talking about here, is another branch of our health freedom. He said to me that your rights are subject to interpretation. So I'd asked him to specify exactly which rights they're reinterpreting, and, you know, since Parliament can't reinterpret our rights because they're there to make the legislation, not to interpret. The Supreme Court does that. When did the Supreme Court reinterpret our rights? Which rights were reinterpreted? By whom? And when were they going to tell the Canadian public? Yes. And, of course, all of these rights are going down because internationally all our health systems are being coordinated and harmonized together. So all the most draconian, lowest common denominator of health care is being applied internationally. And at the same time as we see these cases cropping up, as you so ably point out, across the United States, they're cropping up now in Canada. And they're cropping up in increasing numbers. It is getting very, very scary to be human these days.
And actually, Americans who should be very scared about what is being harmonized coming from Canada. There is an organization that is developing elder laws, a suite of elder laws that is based in BC and is migrating these laws across Canada and in the U.S. They work. There is a joint Canadian and U.S. advisory board to this organization. And
ooh, hey, Lois, I need to know more about that. So you and I are going to talk. I need to know more about that one. That is really heavy duty, that things are actually cross-border now. You don't have your sovereignty left. So even if we were to fix the situation in Canada, the U.S. situation would overwhelm us with harmonization. Again, harmonization everywhere we look. And it's
yes.
Lowest common denominator, not highest.
Yes, exactly. And on one of the issues, you mentioned how they're going to be, you know, they seem to, there's this expendable, it's like a civil war, and it's against a particular demographic. But it's not just, we need to be very, very clear, it's not just putting people, to an early death. In some cases, people are being incarcerated when they don't need to be in facilities and being kept there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We
now it's a profit
have seen
industry.
There is now legislation being developed in BC which essentially does away with habeas corpus, and the public is not being made aware of it by the media. It is Section 59 of the Adult Guardianship Act of the in British Columbia, Canada, and that allows anyone to come into anyone's home without a warrant, without a court order, and apprehend a person, detain them, and treat them against their will. There is no opportunity to challenge the decision. There is no time frame set on how long they can keep a person. There is no appeal process. There is nothing. It is the disappearance of our rights, and that can and there's no evidence that's required to be put forth to anybody. It is the free will of healthcare. In some cases, they're being called stormtroopers, who simply can come into anybody's home at any time on the slightest whim, whether it's real or not, whether it's in some cases we have documented evidence of of lawyers and police officers cooperating with doctors who are surreptitiously, simply what they call it here is scooping up people. These are elderly people. We got a call from, contact a week ago from a woman in Toronto about the death of her mother in Winnipeg. And this elderly woman, this mother, she was literally scooped up at 11:30 one night from her home that she shared with her son. Her son was home. She was home. She was asleep. She is an elderly woman who had colorectal cancer. They woke her up, three police officers, and they took her off to a hospital. She spent the next 6 weeks before she died a very miserable death being mistreated. And it is, this is what's happening across the land, and somehow or other, this elephant in the middle of the room is being ignored by all political parties, by governments, by authorities, and especially by the media, who should be ashamed of themselves.
And
so people need to know that this is happening. We are getting such desperate calls from people who, and the one reason they can do this is because it seems impossible to believe that people could be so abused, that tactics could be so used against ordinary law-abiding citizens, families trying to protect their loved ones, and so forth. But it is
horrible. Now, it's overwhelming. It really is overwhelming. I mean, I was in a situation. I mean, I'm an older woman, as you know, and as our audience knows, because I don't hide it. But the bottom line is, back in the day when my grandparents went into nursing homes, there were certain things that we found abusive, but the worst thing was that my grandfather and my grandmother, while both being put into nursing homes, were not put together in a nursing home so they could be together, and they'd been married more than 50 years. I mean, I thought that was incredibly cruel. But that was the worst thing that we were seeing back then. I dare say a lot of this was going on that people weren't aware. And thank God for organizations like your own, because people really need to be aware. It's progressed to a horrible state where you can't trust anybody. Anyone can become an asset to be exploited at any moment of any time.
And that one of the problems that arises is often, you know, people go into these facilities and things are going reasonably well, so they think, but of course there's no one there 24/7, so you don't really know. The residents quickly become very savvy and are fearful and know that if they open their mouth, they may suffer retribution. So it's widely acknowledged by the government and political parties that people and families don't wish to speak out because they're fearful. Mm-hmm. But in fact, many families do wish to speak out. It's just the political parties don't want them to. But what happens is that the minute somebody, you know, has a concern or raises a question or something or other, all of a sudden the fake smiles on the part of staff and so forth drop away, and they become a target. And all of a sudden the situation can spiral downward very, very quickly, and they find themselves in a nightmare situation that they could never have imagined.
Exactly.
And one of the common characteristics of these cases is that there are efforts made to falsify the records with regard to the conduct of family members and so forth in an attempt to smear the reputation of the person who wishes to protect a senior from institutional abuse. And this happens time and time again. When we take on cases, we have all of the, we request all of the documentation and so forth. So when we speak about these cases, we're speaking about them with actual evidence and proof to confirm that this is going on. And if it was only a few isolated cases or extenuating circumstances or something, then you could sort of say, well, that's, you know, sort of things happen occasionally. But what we find is across our entire country, the tactics and the issue, the situations are virtually identical.
Mm-hmm.
Virtually
like,
identical.
This is exactly is happening even in the natural health industry, where you're finding that no matter where you go, they're all talking the same rule book.
Yes.
And we're even talking internationally now.
Mm-hmm.
And every
mm-hmm.
time we turn around, they're all of a sudden, there's no individuality, there's no personality going on
mm-hmm.
in any of our healthcare facilities because they're all marching to the beat of the same drummer. Well, I'd like
exactly.
to know who in the flying blue blazes is that drummer.
Certainly in Canada, we've researched this, and we've also researched a bit in the U.S. as well. A few years ago, there were at the federal and provincial and state levels efforts made to bring elder abuse forth, bring it out of the closet, and that sounded wonderful. When we looked a little closer, we saw that those efforts and a massive PR campaign were aimed only at family and friends as mm-hmm. the abusers.
Yeah.
Now,
yep.
there
and
are families.
I remember the commercials, too. They,
yes.
they had public service announcements sponsored by the Government of Canada, and in those commercials, what they showed was elders being abused by family members and those close to them. It showed nothing whatsoever about what might happen to them if they were in some kind of a care facility.
Exactly. Institutional elder abuse, they are suppressing that. They're even suppressing the term. They will not discuss it. So why would they be only focusing on one and not the other? And we have actually talked to representatives of all of the political parties about this issue, and they are simply silent on the matter as if
mm-hmm.
it does not occur. And actually, the statistics show that the prevalence of elder abuse is far greater in an institutional setting committed by institutional staff, doctors, and so forth, than it is in the community setting, i.e. in family and friends. Now, not dismissing that issue of family and friends abusing the elderly. It happens, and it's horrific. But there is far more abuse, far more
mm-hmm.
Horrific abuse being committed by healthcare providers and by public agencies like the public guardian and trustee offices.
Mm-hmm.
And in
and
several
so basically,
provinces,
if you beat Granny up, or you steal her money, you might wind up on page 15 of the newspaper in some column. But if you abuse Granny by polypharmacy and drugging her to the nines and taking away all her rights and making sure she can't speak for herself in any way, shape, or form, nobody wants to talk about it. Isn't
yes.
that intriguing?
It is. And actually what it does, it is from a public relations perspective, what it does, it establishes in the public the mindset that, oh, the family must be to blame. So if a family
mm-hmm.
member tries to raise some concerns about the nursing home, automatically the nursing home staff will be believed over and above
mm-hmm.
the concerned family. And so we have case after case after case of this sort of thing where this information is simply being suppressed. The
yeah.
the leaders at the top of each government know about it, as do the media and so forth. They know about all of these cases, and they simply will not print them at all. They print very selectively only those cases that they wish to give a certain message, or occasionally they'll print a story about institutional abuse just because there are so many bodies, to pardon the pun.
They scapegoat somebody.
Yes, exactly.
They'll pick one institution and they'll say, look at this institution, we're wiping
yes.
them out because
exactly.
see, on the one hand you're pointing out the abuse, on the other hand you're showing the public when there is a problem, we come in like white knights and solve it.
Yes, and so don't worry about it. You just go and go back
yeah.
and go
back to sleep now. Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
So You know, so that's how they keep things suppressed. Families have a very difficult time trying to get their story out, trying to get help from anybody. They often, as soon as there are any complaints or concerns, even when there are complaints or concerns of any type, family members, they routinely go to isolate the person in the residence. Family members are restricted or banned. That's common. It's also becoming more common now that substitute decision makers also, not just family, if they're not, sometimes they're one and the same and sometimes they're different, being banned, including the person being banned from seeing a lawyer. We've got all of those cases that we've encountered over just even the last 6 months. Oh, all of those kinds of cases.
And we thought we lived in a free country, right?
It is a very alarming situation that's occurring. It's occurring across the continent in a way that is very insidious. You don't even notice that it's happening. And all of a sudden, everybody you talk to, suddenly somebody has a story about that going on. So that somehow or other, the healthcare industry has morphed into some sort of a monster instead of what it used to be and what it could be.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Lois, we're coming hard on towards the end of our show, and certainly we are so glad that you were able to stay with us as long as you have today. But before we let you go, would you please repeat those websites, including your own, so that people who didn't get the chance maybe to write them down or put them in a format that they can go and do a little more investigation, learn a little more, tell a few more people, you know, draw some interest to what's going on. If you would repeat those for us, I'd appreciate that.
All right. One of the organizations in the U.S. that is doing a lot of work with regard to guardian abuse is I'll give you two websites for the same.
Hello?
National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, and it has another name, and that's nasga-stopguardianabuse.blogspot.ca/. So that's another alternative way in. There is also ProPublica, and I'll spell that for you. It's www.propublica.org, and it's an American-based public interest journalism organization, and it does a lot of good work. And it is elderadvocates.ca. And again, these cases, even if they're in different states or different provincial jurisdictions as we have in Canada, the cases are similar across the board. So
they're all relevant, yes.
They're all relevant. And then Seniors at Risk, www.seniorsatrisk.org. All spelled out, .org.
Wonderful.
Okay. People can contact our organization if they want to know of other groups that they may contact. We spend a lot of time trying to separate the wheat from the chaff in terms of who are truly grassroots advocacy agencies, because there are very, very few of them. Most are funded or in some way compromised by some association with government organization or industry organizations or unions or so forth. And so we can help point people to organizations that we have vetted and have some confidence in.
There you have it, people. There's a road in if you're grabbing at straws and pulling your hair out because of how your elder relative or even your own family, somebody is being treated institutionally. there's your way to get a little help. Seniorsatrisk.org. Lois Sampson, thank you so much for spending as much time as you have with us today. I know it wasn't expected that you do so, but it's been wonderful to get this information out to people. And I hope that people
I wondered if I could just come in and thank Lois again.
Absolutely.
Lois, what do you think is... Where do we go, or what do we do? Like, we're kind of facing this overwhelming odds against us individually, mm-hmm. kind of. I just don't understand how anything can move, or...
Here's what I...
Yeah.
Yes, here's what we believe here. We believe, because we have spent so many years trying to get assistance from those bodies and agencies and so forth who should be interested in this and come up dry. So what we have, and we recognize, as you point out, that that individual families on their own, individuals and their families, cannot fight this, because it is too, it is just overwhelming for them. So what they, and the way that they can get away with this is by dividing and conquering. So individual families go up against large organizations who are so practiced at deception and so forth, and bullying,
yeah.
and outright acts that really are crimes, because many elder abuse crimes fall under the criminal code. And so what we are doing is, we believe what we have to do is get the word out, using social media, the internet and so forth, and groups that we trust and work with. Spread the word. You tell five people and have them tell five people about the stories. Come here. Let's work together. It is important that we work together, and I think it's very important that we work together both across Canada and across the U.S. and together between the two countries. So those people who are interested in this subject, who are working in other little groups, we would very much recommend that we work together, we collaborate, and we get a real, true grassroots effort, and we target the politicians. The only people that fear any grassroots efforts and so forth are the politicians. The judiciary in both countries, well, in the U.S. they're elected in large part, so they may fear the wrath of the common man, the ordinary person, but the bureaucrats fear no one, the doctors fear no one, the legal industry is profiting hugely from this, and they're the ones who designed the system that has so hamstrung everyone. So we need to work together at the grassroots level, get the word out there, get the outrage going, and collaborate and work as one. To demand change.
Somewhere, I seem to recall learning at some point that somebody once said, "Honor thy father and thy mother."
Yes.
And
collectively,
if you can't even do that, then I have to ask where our society is. If you're not outraged over this, you ought to be. This is treatment you wouldn't give an animal. And yet we're allowing it to happen to our mothers and fathers and grandmothers and grandfathers routinely.
Mm-hmm. And it's all being done within our own system.
Exactly.
Itself, kind of, which is so peculiar.
Well,
and here's the other thing. It's actually being funded by all of us taxpayers, because, you see, Marilyn Nelson and Arthur Hippie do not have the money to hire lawyers. And they're up against... taxpayer-funded lawyers for the hospital, the public guardian and trustee, the doctors, they're all being funded with no end in sight to hire lawyers to fight. And all she wants to do is to get him out of that facility where she can get him more rehabilitation and so that he would not be mistreated as he has been for 2 years. So the system, the legal system, she can't even, in Canada, they do not provide legal aid for this area of law either.
No, they don't.
So So it's just it's ridiculous. We have to stand together. We have to rise up in outrage, and we have to demand that changes be made, and not allow politicians and the media and so forth to hide behind a rock and not deal with particular issues,
exactly.
Whether they benefit from it or not.
Society did a little granny snatching of its own.
I really believe that we have come to that point where we had better stand up for those for people who are so vulnerable, because literally our entire society is at peril if we have our government structures, our government bodies so complicit in such a massive effort.
Yeah.
There was
a
rally in the U.S. In November last year at Washington, D.C., with a number of American organizations dealing in this particular issue, and they actually liken it to, they call it the Holocaust of the elderly, and I am sad to say I think the similarities are enormous.
Yeah.
It is valid to liken it to that. Yes.
Well, on that note, which is a hell of a note to end an interview with, but by God, it's the only note that we can play right now. It is that horrendous. It is that bad. And again, Lois, my greatest thanks to you for being here with us and telling people about what's going on. Christopher and I now have only a few minutes before we have to close the show entirely. And, I can only hope that you'll be able to make use of this archive and educate more people. And I can tell you that for my part, I will make an attempt to educate as many as I can. And if we do what you say, which is all stand together, maybe we've got a shot at turning this around.
Yes, and I would like to say to any listeners, united we stand, and if we stand together, we're stronger. So we would appreciate hearing from anyone who is interested and has comments or observations or would help us spread the word to their contacts, their circles of acquaintances and so forth.
Wonderful. I plan to
do that. All right, thank you.
Well, thank you so much again for being with us.
And I appreciated it greatly, and I appreciated speaking with you, Dee, and thank you as well, Christopher.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
So, Christopher, holy smokes.
Holy smokes. so overwhelming. Everything in the medical profession is like all these drugs and their interactions and how they drug up the seniors and they put them in the homes and feed them things like Haldol and other non-prescription drugs.
Oh yeah,
and
I mean
it's terrible.
Like I said, I was a witness to this one particular hippie case. I'm a witness to that.
Really? Wow.
And I knew the man before he had his strokes. And you know, I see pictures of him now. I can't get out there and visit to him because it's not feasible for me to do so, distance-wise and transportation-wise. But I can tell you, I've seen him since, and the care that the hospital has given him, well, that care has resulted in him being a skeleton. He's like a bare shadow of his former self. There's no reason for this. There's no medical reason for this. But he is in dire straits, and I know that Ms. Nelson has been fighting tooth and nail to keep him safe, and that's all she wants. And yet her story and his story, they're just exemplars of what's happening across the country. We cannot stand by and have this happening. I mean, for God's sake, Christopher, I could be there 2 years from now.
Yeah, yeah.
No thanks.
Yeah.
Shoot me first, please.
Yeah.
You know, I would seriously, a lot of our elderly people, I'm sure, would rather be dead than be in situations like that. My dad spent a little time in hospital with a broken hip. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he looked around him on the ward and he said, how can they keep people like this? He said, this is cruel. And my dad was 93. he brought me to tears.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the one who was suffering so badly at the time. It was other people around him. So, you know, we're looking at a scenario that people are largely trusting so blindly these institutions that are there supposedly for our good and for our protection and our benefit. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, really.
Come to find out, we are the profit motive.
Yeah.
Again, we are the profit motive.
It all links back to the same international corporations and the corporate elite the trade laws that you've talked about.
Yeah, doesn't it, Jeff?
It all just leads back to these same people.
Yeah,
to kind
and you
of
know what?
Scheme all these things through all these corporations. And, sorry?
Yeah, you know what's mind-boggling about what you just said?
What's that?
I've been screaming that same stuff for 10 years, and everybody
thought I was
crazy. And they're going, oh, they wouldn't do that. And I'm going, oh, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Well, you just wait. And now they're all coming to me and saying, hey, did you know the trade groups are behind all this stuff? You know, driven by the multinational corporations. I'm going, you think?
And now they're kind of
seizing. Do you not remember where you heard it? You know, hello.
They're seizing people's properties and lands and such through the sustainability movement. And
The whole thing is
just so terrible.
Well, yeah, and people are sitting there and they're in a state of disbelief because they can't connect to the idea of that level of corruption going on so close to home and in their face.
Yeah,
they
really
can't connect to it. They're in this paradigm that says, on the one hand, and it's a disconnect on itself, because on the one hand, they say to themselves, you can't fight City Hall, okay? On the other hand, they say, oh, well, you can trust City Hall because they wouldn't do anything like that. But yes, they are. Oh, yes, they are. And we see it in the chemtrails that you've covered. That you know, we see it in 911 that you've covered. We've seen it in the usurpation of our religions, our educational system, our medical system, our health care, everything.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's just like every aspect of society, it's been corrupted by these kind of corruptible inner elements.
And they did it
by stealth,
they did it because they withheld information, critical information about our rights being overtaken by these international obligations which supersede our laws. This is why government does not listen. It's not because some of them don't want to. It's because they can't. They're bound by law not to listen to us because what we're saying runs contrary to the trade law. Oops. Where'd your country go? Gee, I don't know. Well, you were sitting there watching it. Well, I didn't see nothing. All we got is free trade. Isn't that wonderful? No, because it's not free. We used to have free trade with a handshake.
Boy, I like Lois's description of the medical industry as the medical industry, she called it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. It's all industry. Everything is industry this, industry that. Our healthcare system, the medical system, was taken over by use of John Rockefeller's programs to set up cartels. He had already set up an oil and gas cartel by 1897. He had control of chemicals and gas through Standard Oil, which, by the way, is Sony. Standard Oil New York, S-O-N-Y, that's Sony. You thought it was Japanese? Ha ha, it's not. But the bottom line there is, the cartel started back then. The direction towards chemical medical treatment started then. And the reason it started and was continued through the Flexner Report and all these other little machinations that they pulled, they took total control of everything.
Wow.
And now we the people have to get it back.
Yeah.
So we the people have to stand up, because if we the people don't, who's going to?
Yeah.
Who's going to do it if we don't? You know, and what about our kids? What about our grandkids?
Yeah, and who are these people?
And who are these people, and how dare they?
Yeah,
and you know
really.
What? We outnumber these puppies. You know, by 7 billion to 1, we outnumber these guys, and we're still sitting on our thumbs and doing nothing. Hello.
Okay, do you have to, did you have any final address or comment just to end the show on, and we'll have to...
Yeah, yeah, watch for my columns at examiner.com, because I'm the Toronto Healthcare Examiner for examiner.com out of Colorado, and we're an international magazine, news magazine covering all topics, but as usual, I'm not exactly pulling any punches in my columns, so please take a look at those columns. And please feel free to share them. I will be doing a column on this precise issue within the next week.
Great. Excellent.
So, you know, we're going to try and kick some butt. What about you, pal?
Well, I'll just have to go along here and see what happens.
Something always does.
Yeah, yeah, it always does.
The life of Christopher Holmes, man, is the way it is.
So, anyway, this is Dean Nicholson and Christopher Holmes on the Zero Point Radio Show. Thanks for being with us, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Dean. Goodbye. Thanks for another great one.